Welcome to the Minute of Eight Gang Podcast, episode 240. I'm Steve Borsch, and I'm on with Tim Elliott.
Can you hear me now?
I can hear you now. Graham Thickens.
Hey, and I got the mute button off this time.
Woo. Excellent, excellent.
And our buddy, you're a real pro, Graham.
Oh, hey, baby, I know how to work these things now.
What a technologist.
I'm a master. Don't let me run the console, though, please.
And our buddy Phil Wilson is off this week. We think he'll be on next week, we hope. And other than that, we've been doing nothing. We've all had our feet up on the desk, and we've been just reading technology magazines and websites, right? All week?
Absolutely. Yeah, there's some good local news here.
Well, there is some good local news, but I don't know if you guys know what day it is today, but somebody in the UK called me and said... Happy birthday, Tim.
Hey, thanks. We cut that off just in time before the Apple police would come for the Beatles and ask you for a royalty.
Yes. And crush us.
So the Apple Corps. Do they still go as Apple Corps, or did Apple buy that? I don't know.
You know, I don't know either.
They made some deal on there, but anyway.
So that they could get Beatles songs on iTunes. That was one of Steve Jobs' last things. He had to have that. But, so 43 years old, my God.
No, not quite.
Oh man.
A little
closer toward retirement, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, are you going to have your 5 million, like your goal?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. When I'm about 85, I probably will.
Yeah.
Hey, I got the surefire way. Just do like Carl Icahn did. Just buy Apple stock. He bought it at $1.85 billion. Now it's worth $2.5 billion. There you go.
So just lend me $1.85 billion.
Yeah, just easy way to make money.
Yeah, buy and then Apple go meet stock. With a CEO.
Yeah. Yeah. Run out the stock.
Yeah. Get him to help you out. Or do what Smart Things did, right? They raised $12.5 million.
Yeah, they're partying.
Good on them.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it was...
Although every story that they write about them now, they say it's a Washington, D.C.-based startup instead of Minneapolis.
Well, that's because that's where Physical Graph Corporation is. Even though there's... there's... I don't know how many people are here. 60, 70 people in Minnesota.
Well, they sort of started here. Yeah. They kind of started here.
Yeah.
Ben moved to Washington, D.C. He did. I wasn't... clear how many people they had out there, but yeah, there must be more people in Minnesota than in Washington, D.C.
Yeah, I think so.
For them, yeah. But yeah, we don't really get reported as being the headquarters state for Smart Things.
I know, what a drag.
Yeah, well, so, these things happen, you know.
Well, I know last week I said something about, you know, about that Apple patent, you know, and the Internet of Things. And then on the heels of this article coming out in All Things D about Smart Things raising the $12.5 million, I also follow their blog, and, you know, they made an announcement on their site, obviously, but, a company called Quirky raised $79 million, including $30 million from GE. And I stuck a photo in the show notes here. I'll put that on the site too, about a display at Home Depot that I saw of this Quirky stuff.
They've sort of come out of nowhere. I mean, just like Smart Things, they were on Kickstarter, but all of a sudden now, I mean, they're everywhere.
Well, that's the power of GE behind them. You know, it was GE that got them into the Home Depots. Let's face it, you know.
Yeah.
They have a lot of clout in the consumer products industry.
Right.
And other industries.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and it's the difference, though, in Quirky is they're all Wi-Fi based. So they've got this egg thing. And Tim, you were talking about how you'd use that, right?
Right. If it wasn't $70, I might use it. But for $70, you can buy a lot of eggs.
You can buy a lot of eggs, yeah.
Yeah, I just, when in doubt, I just buy eggs then sometimes we have more eggs than we need, and other times we have just enough. So
right.
I don't think I need a Internet of Things thing to tell me when I need to buy eggs.
Right.
But it's cool. It's cool nonetheless.
Well, and that's, you know, that's been always been the thing. If you remember the beginnings of the personal computer market and everything was all about recipes. Oh, you can keep your recipes on there at home, you know, and yeah. everybody used that.
I tried to do that. I tried to do that starting with my Apple II. And now on the Mac, I have an app so called Sous Chef, and I might have 5 recipes in the darn thing.
I know.
So I mean,
joke.
Good intentions, but I've never. In fact, I think I tried to do it with HyperCard one time too, way back when. But yeah, you just don't take the time to do that.
Right. Well,
I mean, I'm sure some people do, but I have not been successful.
Well, in this quirky thing, you know, they've got this round sensor that does all kinds of different stuff, heat and moisture and so forth, and a power strip that's Wi-Fi enabled, but all their stuff's Wi-Fi and SmartThings, and most of the others are other technologies like Z-Wave and Zigbee, which are mesh networks. So if you put in a switch, it'll talk to another switch elsewhere.
Well, let's say you live in an apartment and the guy next door buys one of these, could he like control your SmartThings stuff?
No, because he'd need your password to get in. I mean, it would just be like your Wi-Fi network. If you don't have a password on it, yes, somebody can get in and use your Wi-Fi, but obviously you've got to secure it. But no, okay. So he can't control it, because what you end up doing, so for example, if I go to Amazon and buy the new one of the new GE Jasco plugs, you know, just a plug you can plug a lamp into, and you have to actually handshake that to your smartphone, to the SmartThings app. So you have to register that device. And once it's registered, that's it. It's locked to that particular hub. And so, no, your neighbor couldn't like come close to your house with his smartphone and start
couldn't
registering
be flashing
your devices.
Your lights off and on.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. Oh God. But if it's an unprotected network, think of the fun you could have, you know?
Oh, no kidding. No kidding. Well, you know, actually security is a big deal. There are a lot of articles about the security of the Internet of Things, because people are in fact worried about that exact thing, is that someone will be able to get in and control devices and turn things on and off and hack into your network. So that is a concern.
Yeah, so the you've got to tell the scriptwriters about this, and they're going to make some conspiracy movie where, like, the hackers are going to come in and take over your house with all your sensors and stuff.
Well, yeah. Well, imagine if you had
the NSA. NSA will monitor you.
Well, imagine if you had the drapery motor, and you hacked into that in somebody's house, and you raised the motor, and then you'd be able to see them. That would be bad. I think.
Yeah.
So what's the deal this week on the Give to the Max website crash?
Yeah, so they had a lot of traffic and it went down during crunch time.
Yeah. Did you guys try the site? I didn't have a chance to try it. I was out most of the day.
I was too. I didn't get a chance.
Yeah, I didn't either.
I read about it later.
I guess it's a good problem to have, is where they, you know, they had so much traffic that it overwhelmed their ability to take money. But unfortunately, they were down for several hours and they weren't able to take a lot of money during that time. So I can imagine they set a record with what they did, but had it been working the whole time, they probably would have blown past that.
Yeah,
like they quite did. A bit.
They did 17 million. They probably could have done 20 or more million.
Or more, yeah. They probably
wouldn't have been down for, what, 4 hours, was it?
Yeah.
Something like that.
Till like 1 o'clock in the afternoon. Well, they had 52,000 donors. So that's a lot of concurrent connections.
Yes, you know? It is.
I mean, it's just like, oh my God, I'd love to have that problem on my own website where, you know, I'd love to have 52,000 orders coming in.
Yeah, really.
But there's no way. I mean, I think we've got it set for 25 concurrent users in terms of transactions.
Right.
Is about all I could handle. And yeah. Which is fine for us, but
You know, it's kind of surprising because the GiveMN folks use Resu, which is a pretty robust service to take money. And I'm surprised it went down.
Hosted by Rackspace, is it? Or
it is, and they're out of Washington D.C. and they're really really pretty robust service from when I've used them for the overnight website challenge stuff that I've done.
But you know, if you go, I'll put a link in the show notes to Resu. But if you go to their site, it says causes raising money right now, and they've got 8 causes up that are raising money. And so who knows what was happening concurrently, because they had fundraisers going on for the Philippines, relief efforts. And it says they've raised over $170 million so far on 84,000 fundraising websites, 1.3 million donations. So, I mean, who knows what was happening to their servers at that moment, and whether or not they can scale up and down.
Well, you raise a good point. The Philippines relief efforts could be overloading everything. You know what I mean? Because there are so many different sites raising money for that now.
Yeah.
That had to have something to do with it,
Well, and that's always the tough part. I remember having a very brief conversation with Jamie Fingelstead once, who's our local CTO guru. He had been CTO at Dow Jones. They'd sold their company to Dow Jones. To MarketWatch. And Dow Jones bought CBS MarketWatch. MarketWatch, I don't know, sold it to CBS, whatever. That's one of the big things about Amazon Web Services is being able to literally, in real time, near real time, watch your dashboard and dial up and dial down your computing requirements. And you can also pay them money to have that happen on the fly. So if all of a sudden you've got another 100 people coming in, but you've already maxed out your computing resource, you can pay them or set it up so that it'll scale automatically.
Which raises the question, can that be done on Rackspace, and will Resu now be looking at AWS?
That's a really good question.
Yes.
You would think they would have diverse hosting, though. Just for this kind of thing, in case, what if, Rackspace, God forbid, went down, you'd want to be able to switch over to another hosting provider.
Yeah. A failover. Yep. That's the kind of stuff that Netflix does, like a ring and a bell,
Well, this past week, Amazon Web Services had their reInvent 2013 conference in Las Vegas. Jamie and many others from the Twin Cities were out there. And apparently there was some cheesy marketing going on from Rackspace and others who were there trying to get people to come over to their hotel rooms.
Oh, please. Was Scobel behind that? He's their chief evangelist, isn't he?
That's right. Yeah, he is.
Startup evangelist. Yeah. I wondered, I was thinking about that this week. Is Scobel in Vegas, and what the hell is he doing? Well, there you go.
Yeah, maybe it is. Well, I'll put a link to that article because it was kind of funny. It's called "Short Shorts and Long Buses: Amazon Cloud Competitors Look a Bit Foolish at AWS Conference." Huh. But any of us who have been out to conferences, I was at Comdex's and Consumer Electronics Shows and all kinds of different events out in Las Vegas, and it's always like that, where you've got people roaming and if they look at your badge and see that you're some leader in a company, they try to get you to come to their hotel room so they can pitch you.
And
I think that is pretty common, but this might have been a little cheesy on their part.
Well, there's always a lot of snarky billboards and taxi tops and stuff where they're trying to get attention away from others. I mean, it's dog eat dog.
Yep.
Those things, $150,000 at CES or whatever. By the way, did you hear how many are going to be at Dreamforce this coming week?
No.
125,000 Salesforce is claiming now. The largest software show ever. They're trying to be in your face to Larry Ellison, I'm sure, with what does he call his Oracle World or whatever?
Open World.
Open World. Yeah.
Yeah, well, anyway, yeah. So Benioff is like, in your face, Larry, I got the largest show.
Well, that's incredible.
Takes over the whole city, you know. The three Moscone's aren't nearly big enough for that.
So, yeah, well, also, where are you going to stay?
Well, that's just it.
There's not enough hotel rooms.
Yeah, people sleeping in the streets. I mean, they probably got display. People, you know, probably have displays set up in the streets. I don't know.
Well, you know what I found really interesting is I remember when Salesforce, which I'm sure they regret calling it that now, but when they came out with AppForce, you know, the ability mm-hmm. to have that S-Force layer that you could build apps on top of, mm-hmm. and how brilliant that was. Well, then Mark Benioff, the CEO, comes out maybe a month ago and says that he points to that success as being inspired by Steve Jobs, who basically told him to build a platform and, you know, create incentives for people and all of that, and which I'm sure he looked to the success of Microsoft in the PC space, because nobody partners better than Microsoft. And that was really the root of their success, was they had everybody and their brother lined up because their incentives were aligned with Microsoft's success. So you had everybody and their brother pushing them forward.
Yep.
So, well.
Interesting that Steve Jobs was not only, you know, I guess a friend of Benioff's, but a very close friend of Larry Ellison's too.
Oh, very much so. Yeah.
Yep.
Well, it kind of makes me wonder if Ellison, who's famous for having a house that, you know, is very Zen-like, it's very Japanese, yep. and he's got his Zen garden and everything else. And, you know, now he bought, what island did he buy in Hawaii?
Lanai.
He bought Lanai. Yeah.
The one you can see from West Maui, right across the channel.
Yeah,
I've stared at it many, many times for hours on end from my surfboard.
Well, I've actually been on the island.
Who has? You have?
Yeah. It used to be owned by the Dole.
Right,
it used to be like
folks.
It used to be just a pineapple place.
Yep.
And way back, like maybe 20 years ago or so, we went there, and I went on a diving excursion, and it was right off. They took us right off the coast of Lanai, and it was so close I just swam in and walked on the beach.
Oh wow!
just to say that I've been on Lanai. There was nothing there. I mean, it was barren. But yeah. there was a pretty exclusive resort there. Probably still is, but now it's Larry's Island. He's hanging out there with Gilligan in the
and
the is GA, that where they filmed probably. That?
No.
Okay. All right.
Well, you remember when Bill Gates got married and rented the whole damn island?
Yeah. Well, I'm just looking at the Wikipedia article here, and said in '85 Lanai passed into the control of David Murdoch as a result of his purchase of Castle and Cook, then owner of Dole, to your point, Tim. And then and Ellison purchased Castle and Cook's 98% share of the island. The state owns the remaining 2%.
Yep.
So it's just like, oh my God. They think between $500 and $600 million, which is probably, you know, he probably keeps that in a petty cash drawer in his desk. Ellison.
Yeah, right. Yep.
Wouldn't that be awesome, though, to own one of those islands? Oh my God.
It would be good.
Yeah. Imagine the parties. Yeah. Hey, everybody, come on over to my island over in Hawaii. Let's hang out for a while. Plus the fact you could just saturate the thing with Wi-Fi, right? Put up your own mobile towers or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe he'll hold
not to mention what you could
in Maui,
I mean, not to mention what you could do with that Internet of Things thing with your Zigbee mesh network.
Oh my God. You could be switching stuff on and off everywhere.
It could be, all over the place.
That's right.
With your iPhone.
That's right. Well, you know, one of the things that, speaking of Lanai, okay, this is going to be my segue, is, you know how expensive it is to ship stuff? Because everything's got to be shipped. I mean, if you need wood, you have to ship wood over. You need shingle. I mean,
you mean to Hawaii.
To Hawaii, yeah. So if you're living there.
Right.
But our buddies here in Eden Prairie, Stratasys, you know, who bought MakerBot, soon you'll be able to just print everything you need, right? Won't that happen?
Yeah.
Okay. And now they're,
and especially when they're on a mission to put one in every school.
One in every school. Yeah.
That's a brilliant strategy. I mean, who's going to argue with that?
Well, I think that is even more important than you know, putting an iPad in every school, which is a lot of people's goals.
But can you print to a 3D printer from your iPad? That's the question.
No.
Probably
none of the software is available, I wouldn't think.
Yeah, but how far away can that be? I mean, come on. That's
true. That's, yeah.
Somebody's working on that. MakerBot themselves, I would think, wouldn't you?
Oh, I'm sure. Well, there's a new technology in the UK that I read about yesterday, I think, that is essentially, it sprays fibers, and those fibers become a textile, and as you're spraying them, they interweave, and there's great strength with the weave. And so the whole point was to this article was that this invention will revolutionize 3D printing because you'll be able to actually print clothing. And so now, you know, Stratasys is working on all these different materials. They've got one that's metallic. They've got one that obviously is polymer based. And then, you know, that's what's going to get really interesting when it gets beyond the prototype stage. So, you know, Graham, imagine your wife now, instead of creating crafts, that she just sits down at the computer and creates designs and sells the designs.
Sure, sure.
And you don't have to go to those shows.
Yeah, or creates them that way and then goes to the show and sells them, or sell them on Etsy, which she chooses not to do. But I've got a project for you, Steve. I think we should put forth the challenge that you do this and you weave a pair of underwear for Phil.
You know, that would be really great. Could I make them really scratchy?
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, with like balloons and stuff on them or something.
There you go. But yeah, what a great way to get kids involved.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just...
the school thing. Yeah, right. Yeah. Nice story in the Business Journal about that.
Yep. So
yeah, they're out there and they've got plenty of money to do lots of stuff now. They raised a ton of money and now they've got the deep pockets of Stratasys too to help them fund all this stuff.
Well, not only that, but the momentum. I mean, that's one of the things with a company like Stratasys is that they're being really looked at as the 3D printing company, period. They're kind of the HP. I mean, HP has always been known as the company for printers. You know, they're the dominant market share. In fact, they OEM'd 3D printers from Stratasys. And so it'll be interesting. I'm just wondering if Stratasys is going to get acquired by somebody like HP.
Well, that's just what I was going to bring up. I mean, HP must be kicking themselves that they didn't acquire MakerBot.
Early on, yeah.
Well, oh, yeah, MakerBot, even in the you know, when Stratasys did, I mean, I'm sure there were others snooping around and Stratasys moved first and they paid a real premium price. And I'm sure that's because there were plenty of other, or not plenty, but there were enough other willing buyers to cause the price of MakerBot to be quite high. What was it? It was some outrageous, 400 million or 300 and some million,
yeah,
wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, it was just under 400, yeah.
I mean, it's, you know, HP, you know, isn't moving quickly on anything, but they must be kicking themselves that they missed that one. But yeah, maybe the next thing we'll hear about is HP buying Stratasys. You know, it wouldn't surprise me,
but
who knows if they were even thinking about such a thing. I'm sure they'd say they aren't.
I don't know.
Another local company doing some interesting things is Spark. There's a story that Julio had on his blog this week about a couple of new Kickstarter projects that are using the Spark, device as sort of their you know, technology. And the one that I found most interesting is this Q-Box, which is a barbecue smoker that uses the Spark piece to to kind of connect it to your smartphone. You know, obviously barbecue and smoking takes a long time, so. And it's kind of interesting to see something like this where you're able to, you know, remotely get information about the temperature and all that kind of stuff.
Well, Well, see, I really like that too, because we went out and bought a, I'm sure you guys have had these too. It's a very expensive meat thermometer. So it's got a long probe that, you know, you stick into the oven, and a little thin ribbon, like metal ribbon, like cord that goes to the main unit that you then with a magnet stick on the front of the oven. And that way you can tell the internal temperature, but that's only one part of it. You know, that when you're going to smoke, so how many hours does it take?
It could take, you know, 6 or 8 hours to get something cooked. And, what's interesting about this, and a couple of years ago, I was at Macworld in San Francisco, and they, there was a startup there that had a iPhone connected thermometer or probe thing, which I thought was pretty cool. But these guys are kind of taking it to the next level, and it's looking pretty good. And it's good to see that Spark is being used for their Spark Core is being used for, you know, interesting new products like this.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah, and this is before they even ship in great quantity. So they sent out an update, Spark did, saying, you know, there's already a couple of early, you know, developers that are pushing Kickstarter projects based on our device. And, you know, this is before, you know, it's really out there in a large quantity, you know. So, my friend Jamie Ostheimer, who's a big barbecue smoker guy, would love this product. And Spark says some things, sometimes you have to babysit a smoker for up to 15 hours. It's like, wow. What? You know? So, yeah, sounds like for those people who are really into that, it's going to be a cool product.
Yeah. Wow. Well, it's going to be interesting to see how all these things work together and connect together. Because right now I'm already being discerning about what I'm buying in terms of devices. But I want to be able to go, you know, walk into any store, and if they've got the Belkin Wemo, I want to be able to buy that and have it work with my SmartThings hub. I want to be able to walk in and use the drop cam. I want to buy the drop cam and use that as my Wi-Fi connected camera, but I want to be able to control it through my app, so I can say, if this door opens, then turn on the camera, you know, for example, which I can do now with my computer. I've got a little app that runs on that, and if you break the beam of the webcam, it starts recording and then sends me a notification that started to record, but I can leave my computer on then. And so I just want all this stuff to work together and be easy. But
I think we're years away from that.
Yeah, I know. Maybe not years. Do you really think years?
It's the Wild West. I mean, you never know. Might take a year. How about that? By next year, it'll probably be somewhat worked out.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. Well, we'll see. Hey, by the way, my buddy Eric and I had lunch yesterday, and he just went on, and he doesn't usually gush like a little girl, even though that I shouldn't say that, that's really sexist, but he went on and on and on about how he loves his iPad Air, and he has a full size one because his eyes are too small for the mini, not too small, size of the mini is too small for his eyes, is what I meant to say.
So have you guys got the Retina Mini yet?
I haven't even seen it yet. Have you, Graham?
No, I'm not going for one of those because I got an Air, which I also
that's right.
Love.
Yeah.
And I got a really cool case for it, an early case for it from Monoprice. Thank you for that tip, you guys, because there were zero third-party cases for the iPad Air available at the Apple Store. And I had to buy one of their overpriced $79 smart cases, which they say is leather, but I just don't like those smart cases. So I returned that inside of the 14 days because I found on Monoprice a really nice one for like $18. I mean, really nice. $26 with shipping. Arrived in like 2 days. I'll show it to you next time I see you.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah, I love my iPhone 5S case that I got from them. It was like $7, less than $7.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I even
if you ever need HDMI cables, they're the best best place to buy those.
Yeah.
They're like $2-3. So you can get them in every different length you need. I've got, I got some 3-foot ones. I've got some 4, some 5, some 6. It depends on you. You want to have just enough cable for your run. And so you don't have like to wind the cable up or whatever. So you can buy exactly what you need and it's really cheap and you know.
Yeah.
And it comes quick.
And it comes in a couple days from Rancho Cucamonga, California, baby.
That's right. Where I came
from. But I was going to say, Steve, I even called Micro Center to ask them, you got any iPad Air cases yet? No. And really? I go, oh, yeah. You'll probably be getting it pretty soon though, won't you? Well, I think, maybe in about a month. And I go, a month? I need something like a little faster than that. So I'm glad I didn't drive all the way up there to check it out. But
from the reviews I've read and the podcasts I've listened to where people talk about the differences between the two, it seems like the Air is smaller and is almost as light as the Mini. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see if they actually, you know, reverse sort of the sales trends where the full-sized iPad was sort of going down in sales while the Mini was exploding. Mm. And maybe they'll level out a bit now.
I think they will, especially since the Retina is now $399, not $329 like the original Mini. So, you know, it's a little higher price point and there could be people thinking, oh, hell, for $399, I'll go another $100 and get an Air, you know?
Yeah. I think if I was in the market to do that, that would probably be my thought process, because the bigger iPad is a more, you know, productivity sort of device, where the Mini is more of this consumption where you're reading or you're watching TV or whatever. So it's a better value for your $100. You get more out of it.
And I got to tell you that, and I'm going to put a link to this in the show notes, because yesterday I had a presentation to a board for one of our services, and I always carry this little zippered case, and in it has all sorts of connectors. So I have a VGA connector, I've got a DVI connector, I've got all kinds of different things, an Ethernet connector, anything I think I can need. So I show up into this nice boardroom, and the walls are burgundy, so they're not reflective at all, and somebody did have a projector there. But their primary display was an HDMI display, and I did not have my Mini display port to HDMI cable, which I had left back in the office. And so I'm looking at Monoprice right now, and they have 3-foot, 6-foot, 10-foot, 15-foot Mini display port to HDMI cables. And the 15-footer is $8.72.
Oh, my God.
And the 3-footer is $6.58. And it's like, I look at this and I go, oh, I'm going to buy a couple of links here. They're cheap.
Whenever I buy a cable from them, I throw in extra cables that I may need in the future, but I'm not sure, you know? Because they charge you a fair amount for shipping. It's, you know, I don't know, it's $4 or $5 usually for each order that I do. So for that, I'm thinking, well, I'll throw a couple of extra ones in. So you do some USB cables or some HDMI cables.
Yep.
And eventually I'll probably use them, but you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would have probably
bought a bunch of spare cables now.
I would have bought 2 iPad Air cases if they'd had a second one, but they didn't. They just had one.
Really?
Just out. Yeah. And I grabbed it. I looked at it and thought, yeah, I could, this will stand upright, you know, which is what I need.
Well, again, if you're going out and making presentations with a Mac that has a Mini display port, God, just go and buy one of these and put it in your little kit. Because I've even been at events where I've had that little zippered case and somebody said, oh my God, does anybody have a Mini display port to DVI? And it's like, I do.
You're the guy that comes to the rescue. I had that happen to me at the Mini Analytics event, where I told all the presenters of the startups to bring your own, you know, Mac adapter.
Yeah.
And sure enough, they show up without them. You know, and it's like, oh my God. And somebody saved my rear end in the audience, you know.
But isn't that a crazy maker? And the thing that I love too is they've got these certified lightning cables. So like they have a 3-footer for $11. And, you know, that's 29, 24 or 29 or something at Apple.
Yep.
So
you can, I've seen them around, even less expensive than that. I've seen them for like $4 or $5 each.
Yeah. Well, I will, I will make
So Lightning cables are coming down in price as other, you know, offshore vendors start to, you know, figure out how to build them.
Yeah. Well, I will have everyone exercise one caution. Please read the reviews of products. You know, cables, you don't have to read the reviews, but I looked at this amplified gaming headset for $34.35 and did not have great reviews. I've looked at a couple of other products on here too, and people have said, you know, it kind of blows. I wouldn't recommend buying it. You know, and you read six or eight of those, and you think, okay, I'm not going to get it. And then you read other ones where, like, they have this little LED photo light that you can either use separately or snap onto a camera, and it's $47, and people just gush about it. It's like, oh my God, this thing is awesome, and you know, it's you know, better than you know, there's some other maker that's a big deal maker that this thing is like, you know, $300, and they claim it's equivalent. So
it, yeah, you got to watch out. You were saying that GoPro, that copy of the GoPro camera they have on the Monoprice site had bad reviews too.
Yeah.
Yeah. So watch out.
Yep.
Yeah. But did you see that Snapchat thing this week?
Yeah. What, the $3 billion or something that
they turned down $3 billion. I mean, this guy is insane.
I agree. Yeah. I agree.
No sales, no business model. And they turned down the three because they got investors talking about coming in at a $4 billion valuation. And then O'Malley comes out with, he picks up a rumor that Google offered them $4 billion, and they turned that down.
You're kidding.
Oh, my God.
No. That's what, you know.
So this is going to be the next dig. Snapchat's the next dig where they, you know, they had a sellout. They could make a lot of money, and they didn't do it.
I agree.
And then, of course, that went south. The same thing's going to happen with these Snapchat guys. They're this nuts.
You got to wonder.
That is nuts. That is crazy. Well, because, you know, it's not like they can't get knocked off.
Right.
You know, and we've seen many times how quickly and how finicky people are, how quickly they'll make a shift to a new app. I mean, I would argue that Path, the social app, is one of the bestly.
That's some good English.
It's a new. I'm sorry. I'm still recovering from my horrible cold. You can probably hear it in my voice. It's arguably one of the best written social apps out there. I mean, it's beautiful. It's got a great process in terms of interacting with people and everything else. And when the CEO basically stubbed his toe dramatically on some of the PR stuff, just like instantly everybody walked away.
Yeah.
And so it can go south in a heartbeat.
Well, and particularly when it's so driven by teenagers, you know. And the other thing about Snapchat is it doesn't collect any data. I mean, in that respect, it's totally, totally different than Facebook. But,
I don't see how they monetize it.
No. Well, they don't either. And, you know, but it's just a frenzy. It's like Snapchat fever, baby. That's what I called it. But it's bubblicious, you know.
I mean, it is. And if these guys don't take some sort of acquisition, they're this stupid. I mean, if I ever do another startup and someone offers even $1 billion, when it's a billion. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, that's bragging rights right there. And I'm like saying, okay, yeah, sign me up. I'm not going to haggle over $3 billion or $4
billion. Right. Well, the outfit that was trying to invest in them at a valuation of $4 billion, or they claim that they are wanting to, or they're looking at investing in this Tencent Holdings in China, you know, but they already have a bunch of this kind of messaging stuff, you know, in China. So who knows if they'll come in at a $4 billion valuation. And the problem is, once you turn down Facebook and Google, I mean, can you go back and say, oh, well, Tencent decided they didn't want to invest in us, so could we have your $3 billion now, Zuck? You know,
so I, by so that I probably time, shouldn't, won't care. So I probably shouldn't have turned down the $100 million from Innovate? Right. Damn.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Oh well. Oh, well. Yeah, we could have split that.
What did Digg turn down, and they ended up selling for $500,000? The assets.
They turned down several.
I think it was $200 million.
Yeah,
and it ended up selling for $500,000. So.
Yep. Yeah, it was funny. I think they were that was going to go to Google, and Kevin Rose sold his second startup, Milk, to Google, and he works at Google now.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's kind of funny how things kind of come around.
Yeah, he was on the cover of Business Week. He was like the hot guy, you know.
Yeah, he's doing okay, but he could be doing a lot more than okay had they taken the money. And I'm sure there's a story why they didn't do it, and we'll probably get that inside story at some point. But it just makes him look bad.
Well, you know go ahead.
I was going to say, but Steve, I put that Henry Blodgett slide into the notes just for you, just to show how fast the magazine and newspaper business this plunged, where it's the one that's Google is now bigger than all the newspaper and magazine
combined
companies. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Well, not combined, but one or the other. So Google was larger than those.
They just either the U.S. magazine industry or the U.S. newspaper industry.
But it goes from 2004 all the way down. You could see that the newspaper industry was still very, very profitable, just as close in as 2004.
Yeah.
And it's just going down like a rock. So this is... very interesting slide, and you know, this shows you know how fast things can change.
Isn't it sad? Well, you know, I'm really waiting for the result of the acquisition of the Washington Post by Amazon's Bezos. Jeff Bezos.
Yeah.
Because that'll be really interesting to see what he does with it. You know, how's he going to make it profitable other than you know, find some new syndication or distribution model.
Well, he's already got it. It's called the Kindle, and you know, he's all about content consumption. So this is just more content, and so his business depends on good quality content. So it only makes sense that he's trying to support that.
Right. Well, I still have incredible sadness about what's happening with investigative journalism, and that there's not money in it, not enough money in these industries to be able to do investigative journalism. And where's that going to come from?
Yeah. Well, the journalists are hoping that Bezos is going to fund more of that. You know, there's slivers of hope out there in journalist land that, you know, that their profession isn't completely dying out.
Yeah, yeah.
As they watch things crumble around them.
Yeah, I don't think it's dying out. I think that the paper business, the newspaper business, is dying out. The print business. There will always be a market for good quality journalism, but it'll just be consumed online and in digital formats. So it's just changing.
Right. So, it's the monetization of it that's the issue.
Yeah, well, I mean, look at the photography business. That's as big. Photography is as big as it's ever been, but the traditional companies that have been in the photography business are either gone or almost gone. You know, Kodak being the biggest example of that. But you know, photography as a act, you know, as a medium, is still very much alive. It's just changed. It's gone to your phone.
Right, yep. Right.
The smartphone disrupted a large part of the camera business.
And digital photography just completely destroyed traditional photography in a very short period of time.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, I'm going to put a link in the show notes to, you know, George Takei, who was Sulu on Star Trek, has done a lot of really funny stuff. And he's doing this new show that is on YouTube, and it's an AARP production called Takei's Take. And, you know, it's just fun. They're short and so on. And my daughter, of all people, she and her friends think he is just hysterical. And so she started showing us these, and I went ahead and subscribed to his YouTube channel. And so, you know, we can watch them on our Apple TVs and so on. But he's got one on the future of journalism with a woman named Ann Friedman. And I can't remember who she is now. But, you know, I mean, it's very surface kinds of stuff and so forth. But it's interesting to hear somebody like this in kind of a consumerish, high-level way talk about some of the issues related to investigative journalism and what's going on. So I don't want it to go away. We'll see.
All right.
Well, before we call it a show, I wanted to mention a couple Android things.
Yeah.
I know you guys, you know, don't hang around this, but CyanogenMod, which is one of the big ROM makers and has a huge community around it, and I've used their ROMs over the years on various devices, they just came out with an installer in the Google Play Store that allows you to root several you know, devices that are fairly popular, including all the Nexus line. And I used it on my Nexus 7 last night, and it's very, very slick. The only issue is that you need a Windows PC to do it right now. I'm sure they'll have a Mac and probably a Linux version at some point. But right now it requires a Windows 7 or 8 PC. But other than that, it's very, very slick. It doesn't take, you know, someone with a mad hacking skills like it used to in the past, where you had to, you know, go in with terminal and do a bunch of commands in the right order, and sometimes it worked, sometimes it didn't. This worked right out of the box, very, very easy for people to follow, and your device is rooted, and you have CyanogenMod flashed onto it. So,
have you ever?
I'd say it's a really good solution.
Okay. Have you ever used one of the emulators? Now, I have a full-blown version of Parallels because I've got to have a full-blown version of Windows running. And, you know, stuff like Wine or VirtualBox.
I run VirtualBox on my PC.
So could
I run
you,
VirtualBox, yeah.
So could you, on your Mac? So you could run?
Yeah.
You could run the Windows software required in VirtualBox. Would it work?
That'll work fine as long as you have Windows 7. Yeah.
Okay. Interesting.
So
you've got to have a version of Windows.
Yeah, you can't use Windows XP, in other words.
Okay.
And so when I'm in VirtualBox, usually I'm running Windows XP because I still need it to check websites for compatibility. And that's a great way to keep an XP machine is through a virtual machine.
Well, there's a product that I've never used called Crossover Mac, and I've read a couple of articles about it, and it seems like magic, but it apparently does not require you creating a virtual machine, and it doesn't require Windows.
Are you talking about, is that CodeWeaver's product?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
Out of St. Paul.
Yeah.
It's basically not closed source, but it's a commercial version of Wine.
It's all based on Wine. Yeah, I've written about them. Yeah. I've blogged about those guys.
Have you either of you guys used that? I mean, would that, because then you wouldn't have to go out and buy a full blown copy of Windows, and you know, because there was a point where over at Micro Center, you could walk in and buy a $10 sound card as though you were building your PC. And get a copy of Windows OEM for, I think it was $50. So for $60, mm-hmm. bucks, you got a full blown copy of Windows. That didn't have a manual, but who needs one? You can't do that anymore. Now they'll charge you, I think it's $109 for the mm-hmm. OEM version.
Yep.
So this would be a good deal. Crossover Mac.
I don't think Crossover Mac would work for this.
Okay.
I think you need a still need a full blown version of Windows.
Gotcha.
To run the commands, because you're in terminal basically, or at the command line, doing some stuff. But the CyanogenMod installer just hides that. They run the commands for you, and all you see is this very nice, interface to say, here's what's going on, basically.
Okay.
You have to do some stuff on your device, and once it's plugged in, then you just watch it, and it goes through and flashes. You have to unlock your bootloader, which is on a Nexus device very easy, because it's just basically you just say yes to a screen. On some bootloaders, it'll be, I think, a little more of a process, but that are locked, like the HTC One that Phil has. I think that'll take a couple more steps, but I would imagine that it would be just as easy, where they're going to guide you through that whole process.
Okay.
And at the end of that, you're going to have a fully ROMed, and it puts a clockwork recovery, which is a recovery software that allows you to run into recovery and then reflash a custom ROM on your device from there on in. So,
well, so if a guy was going to go buy the Nexus 7 right now so he could goof with Android and learn Android, if you bought a brand new one, would it come with KitKat, the 4.4 Android?
I bet you if you went out today, it probably would.
Okay.
But
if not, is it easy to upgrade?
Well, yes and no. Okay. If you have the patience to wait, and I'm going to wait on my Nexus 4, you'll get an over-the-air upgrade. And they've just started pushing the Nexus 4, I think yesterday. And so it'll take 3 or 4 days, and then there will be an upgrade for me to run on my phone. And it'll upgrade me to KitKat and keep all the data in place, so it won't flash the phone, right? It acts much the same way that when you do an iOS update, like when iOS 7 came out, you just say yes, and it goes through its thing and it reboots, and you're in iOS 7. Same thing happens on Android.
Okay.
If you want to do it now, you have to install the developer tools, and then you have to go to terminal, and you have to push a command to actually sideload the files to it. So it's a bit more of a geeky kind of production to do it, but you can do it now.
But what about
with the official binary? Okay. So Google released those earlier in the week.
But what about the Nexus 7 tablet? Over there.
Yeah, same deal.
Same deal.
Actually, they started pushing the Nexus 7, I think it was Tuesday or Wednesday. So that's been out for a few more days as far as the over the air. It's being pushed to people. Hasn't been pushed to me yet. So I wanted to check out CyanogenMod for my own information. So I did that last night.
Okay.
What I'm going to do is I'm going to push KitKat over that after the podcast onto my Nexus 7.
I got to tell you, sat down at the Best Buy Mobile store in Eden Prairie Center just a few weeks ago and spent a lot of quality time with the Nexus 7 tablet. And, I was really impressed.
The new one is really nice. It's got just a fantastic screen.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah. Well, I mean, I wouldn't buy this. I'd buy this in addition to an iPad because I absolutely adore the iPad. But the only way that I can really truly learn about another device space is I've got to own one. I've got to live with it. I've got to use it. I've got to understand it. I've got to play with it. Otherwise you can't go into a store and try it 3 or 4 times for, 8 minutes and then walk out and expect that, you're going to really understand it.
Right.
So,
yeah. And Nexus 7 is a great device to kind of get your feet wet.
Okay, cool. Well, so there's, events, there's a new one that, Graham is entering as we speak. The MEMA November event, ironically, is about journalism, ethics, and content in the digital age.
And, yeah, I'm planning on going to that one on Wednesday morning, the 20th. I know Rick Cupcella is on the panel, and I think the publisher, editor-in-chief of the outfit that publishes Twin Cities Business Magazine and a couple other folks. So Yeah, that could be a good one. It's a just a morning event.
Guy from the Strib, and then a guy from the Uptake.
Oh yeah, yeah. Uptake. He's moderating it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that could be a good one. And then, on for all of you community supporters out there of Mini Demo, Mini Bar, I guess the parent org is called Mini Star. We get to go to Mini Hour on that same day, the 20th, at 5:30 at Harriet Brewing. So we get to drink some craft beer. Woo, whoopee. But you have to be a community supporter.
Okay.
You got to pay your $100 a year to get in on that one.
Gotcha.
Glad I did now.
There you go.
I bought some that $100.
That's right. That's some pretty expensive beer.
Well, but, you know, it was worth it just to not have to scramble for a ticket to the Mini Demos. Plus, you know, you are supporting the community. And yeah. They, you know, it's nice of them to throw us a bone with different things, you know. I mean, you know, I got invited to a pre-Mini Demo party the last time, which I think Native X actually put on. But, you know, it was basically for the community supporter folks. Yep. So I don't think we'll put that one in the show notes, Steve, since it's not open to the public.
Yeah, but yeah.
Okay. I just had to rub it in a little bit, though, you know?
It's a good plug to get off our butts and join as a community sponsor so we can help these guys out.
Yeah.
Hey, I just want to mention for those listening that I need to thank Tim and Graham for today's podcast because I made a huge error and was recording but had another window in the recording software open. And so the primary recording actually didn't happen. And 25 minutes in, I realized it. So we re-recorded.
And it's different.
And it is different. It was actually kind of interesting.
I don't know if it was better the first time.
I think the second take was better.
I do too. Right? I do too.
Well, yeah, you got your music cue right and everything.
Yeah, and Graham wasn't belching and eating his Fruit Loops.
There you go.
So.
And right. All those listeners can be grateful they don't have to sit through 25 minutes of dead air.
Yeah, exactly. Right, exactly. Yeah, we were going to do that just to test their patience, but no.
You know, 240 episodes, that's the first time that's ever happened.
That is, yeah.
Hopefully the last time.
And the second mistake I've made in my adult life. So anyway, right. Yeah, but I'm bummed. Well, thank you, well, everyone.
I guess with Phil out, I've got to take his spot at the end.
Yes, feel free.
And say thank you, everyone, for listening on this, the
Men of 8 Gang podcast.
Yeah, baby.
Take care.
Yep.
Bye, guys.